dealing with a continuum here. Viability provides no morally relevant line. The second step of this argument says, well then, we can't clearly say that after viability something is a person with rights, before viability it isn't. Which means we must regard the whole spectrum, all the way back to conception, as one continuum. Then within that whole larger spectrum, what should we say? Well, we clearly say infants have rights, but what's the difference, and the court itself acknowledged this, what's the difference between a 8-month-old fetus and an infant? What we should really say is that the fetus, as difficult a problem as it poses, is a possible person. Now, I don't mean potential by that. I just mean we don't know what it is in its rights-holding status, but by golly, I mean we might just decide that someday with further reflection that it is an entity with rights. It's possibly a person with rights. Now, should you permit the murder, the killing of something that might turn out to be a person? Later, after our further considerations. I don't mean later in development. No. You don't allow, for example, somebody to set up a machine which will shoot various entities that are going to break in the front door of their house. Not knowing which entities, what the entities are going to be, you're shooting, that machine is shooting a possible person, also a possible dog, a possible bicycle or whatever else. But even if it were only a possible person that was being shot, you would not legally permit it. So unless we can show more definitively that the fetus is not a rights-holding entity, we should protect it. That's just a matter of stating our bias toward rights, our bias toward persons. Burden of proof is on the proponent of abortion. The Supreme Court admitted it was a physical, metaphysical unknown, the question of whether the fetus was a person with rights. In that situation, the abortion opponents should carry the day. There are a number of, I think, very strong arguments on the other side. I won't get into what I think is the strongest one because it gets, I think, particularly complicated. But a more simple one is this. Let us grant this previous argument everything it says about fetus being a possible person with rights. Suppose then the fetus is morally, and therefore allegedly should legally be, a person, regarded as a person. There still is a problem for the mother. Assuming the mother used birth control, we'll just make that assumption for them. Assuming the mother used birth control, the fetus, even if it is a person, is an uninvited guest, an uninvited dependent on her. Now, no person is obliged to keep another entity dependent on him or her alive, even if that other entity has rights and is a person. Unless the person on whom the fetus depends invited that entity, the fetus in this case, to depend. But that's just not the case if they've used birth control. The fetus is an uninvited guest. An analogy would be if somebody hooked themselves up to your circulatory system in the middle of the night when you didn't know. Now it might be wrong, but they needed you. They needed somebody. They had to have somebody to exist off of. It might be wrong for you to cut the lines, but you would, I think, have a right to do it. You would have a right to do that. Now what this argument says is not that abortion is right. It just tries to show that the mother has a right to cut the lines. It doesn't say anything about the morality of that. It just says, given our other intuitions about dependency, the mother has a right to cut the lines. Now, you might say, well, suppose she didn't use birth control. The argument then says, practically, there's no way to distinguish between those who use birth control and those who don't. You can't permit abortion for those who do use birth control and not permit it for those who don't. You have to permit it then for all. Conclusion, same with the court. Okay. The matter, I think, gets very complicated. You can just see from this little, these few observations in this review why the matter has been so up for grabs. Let me just note one other thing. The argument is so contentious because, unlike other arguments about regulating morality with the law, you cannot say clearly, to the satisfaction of any two parties in this debate, that the action of the mother in having an abortion is a private action. Those who deny this personhood status of the fetus will say the mother's action is a private action. Those who contend that the fetus is a person will say, no, it affects another being, the fetus. It depends on, and you can't say that, well, this is a public action affecting another person unless you think the fetus is a person. You can't say it's a private action not affecting other people unless you deny that the fetus is a person. But precisely what the argument is about is whether the fetus is a person. So we just keep getting back to that nasty question. Now, given the fact that people don't agree on that, what should be the role of law? Sorry for the extensiveness of those remarks, but Larry has something to add about the current resolutions before Congress.
Well, I just thought it might be important during discussion to have the exact wording of the proposed law. This is the Senate. This is as proposed in the Senate, and it's almost identical for our purposes. It's virtually the same as a proposed constitutional amendment, and that goes, quote, human life shall be deemed to exist from the point of conception without regard to race, age, health, defect, or condition of dependency, end of quotation. What that means is that for the purposes of due process and equal protection, the due process and equal protection guarantees of the 14th Amendment, the word person applies then to all human life from the point of conception onward. So the fetus at all stages is regarded as a person in the legal sentence.
That's not the amendment, that's the resolution.
Yeah, isn't the constitutional amendment the same?
I think it's a little different.
But it deems human life to exist from the point of consent. Both of them are the same at that. It seems to me crucial.
Let me just make one observation about that particular wording that some lawyers have made. Some lawyers have said that what the Supreme Court will do with that resolution, if it's passed, is simply interpret it, and interpret it in the following way. Okay, human life begins at conception. Personhood is still an open question. And the Due Process Clause in the 14th Amendment says no person shall be denied the protection of the law. So that the Supreme Court would still have the latitude to interpret even that.
But the Senate law, proposed law, says that for the purposes of the guarantees of the 14th Amendment, the word person applies to all human life. And it has said what that means. And that's where much of the controversy is now. Because it in effect says the Supreme Court cannot interpret the word person differently than this law states. And that's the constitutional struggle. There's a constitutional question here, and lots of people in Washington are saying that Congress cannot pass a law which says how the Supreme Court must interpret it.
I would prefer that we keep this discussion centered on the legal issue. Assuming that there is a bias toward human life, regardless of all the intricacies of defining when an entity has rights, what should Christian's attitude be toward the regulation in the state as a whole about abortion.
May I ask a couple of practical questions? When is the point of viability of general healthy by the medical community? And is it in fact the case that first trimester abortions are interrupted?
The point of viability is now down to about 4.5 months. Am I right?
Wow, I don't know. That's not, I don't know.
Possible viability.
4.5 months is not what I would consider viable, but conceivably in the future.
Well, it's below 24 weeks, I know that.
Yes.
A little less than 5.5. The problem is, it's got to be, if it's possibly viable, then the physician has an obligation to try to save it after it's been extracted.
And a first trimester pregnancy, if it were aborted or miscarried, is not considered viable.
No, I understand that. But I was concerned about that. The Supreme Court decision reads that the way that Paul was describing, that there is no need for concern about the medical procedure for first trimester. And I was wondering
if
that
was... I think no need for special concern.
So I've heard some talk in court occasionally about questions about the possibility of women conceive later after having had a previous abortion or other possible medical complications that result. I wanted to know if anybody had any knowledge about the basis of that.
I guess if I'm interpreting right, your question is it always medically safe to have an abortion in the first trimester? And the answer is, if it's done by people who are experienced in the procedure, it's very safe. If it's done improperly, it can result in problems.
Are they considering viability outside of the womb? That would be the question of viability.
Viability is. Can it be outside the womb?
But it may include extensive medical care. I mean, we're not talking about viability outside of the hospital necessarily.
Mm-hmm. I raised a question I raised again this afternoon about the artificial womb coming along. I mean, that'll be totally outside the woman's body from the time it's conceived until it's...
Such a development would render the present Supreme Court decision impotent.
Another question occurred to me too is, what do the theologians say about the time when the incarnation took place with Mary? Was that a potential Jesus she was carrying? Was that really Jesus that she was carrying from the time of the Annunciation? Just a little
potential versus possible.
The angel said it was a potential person.
What is this?
But her cousin recognized it.
Her cousin recognized it.
It wasn't Jesus, it was potential Jesus.
Until quickening?
No.
It was potential?
No.
What was it?
Let's see. The fact that the Mary and Elizabeth recognized the quickening term seemed to indicate that was going to happen. Birth was going to occur.
So when the angel talked to Mary, that wasn't really, when the Holy Ghost came over Mary, that was not Jesus there.
There's a rule of thumb in ethics that you don't make your rules about general cases from the extraordinary one. This might be a good place to
I have a question. You mentioned the action of Christians, or the attitude of Christians. What will, if you were a scriptwriter for reading, and you're going to make a talk next week, what issues would you bring up in the few words that you will spend on it, and what issues will you ignore and dodge from because of the political reasons? Because then, as Christians, we could perhaps be more prepared and reactive.
Very good way of focusing.
Because he's going to use the most positive arguments and skirt some, I would assume.
I suspect if I were he, and he has been doing this, is to focus on the fertilized egg is a potential human being. And that is human life, and you can't deny that when you snuff out a human life, it's murder. But I personally believe that that argument, though very true, is entirely irrelevant in the question of abortion and whether you can say that abortion is illegal for anyone to choose.
He would have to say it's a person, not just that it's human life.
Well, this is not really what you're saying, but, and I have a hard time being legalistic because I don't know how laws are made or anything, but I guess what I would have a question about is that if it, you know, if abortion were outlawed, people are going to continue to have abortions. And I don't know if you can make a law on that basis, but if what you were saying before is true, and it's something that's gone, goes back into the back alleys or whatever, that there's going to be death. You know, more. I don't know if it's equivalent.
If I could pick up that thought. Now, you said you wanted to keep this strictly on legal.
It's very hard.
And it's hard because it's not just a legal issue, it's a human issue. And if I can just take 2 minutes and put in my plugging, then I'll
By strictly legal, I mean focus on whether, on what the law should be. Of course that will involve moral arguments. Mm-hmm. Of course we want to get involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a moral discussion about what the law morally should be.
Okay, I personally feel that if that law is passed, that it will be a real human tragedy for a number of reasons. That young girls and women who do not want to have a child will be forced to have a child, and that will change their lives significantly and will not necessarily be a good environment for the child. That's number one. Number two, those who choose not to continue the pregnancy will have very few options available to them, and the back alley abortion is one, and the self-induced abortion is another, and those are horrendous things that often end in at least the loss of the uterus of the woman and often in her death if she doesn't seek medical care soon enough. The other tragedy that would result as a result of that is the number of illegitimate births will climb, the number of children on welfare and the number of women who are dependent on welfare and cannot get into the job market will climb. And this country, which is already in tremendous straits with the welfare system and Social Security, will be carrying a burden that I think they really don't anticipate. And when you look at the number of abortions that are taking place in this country now, and seeing how much it would cost to support those children, and I don't mean to make this just a financial argument, but it is a consideration.
The cost won't be there. What isn't only financial?
That's right.
Can we focus on these arguments for a minute? And assess them, see what the opposition would say to them, whether we represent that opposition or not. Yes?
I have to ask one question here, or actually two questions in your statement. You say that the mother, without the abortion, her life would change. Would it also not change with the abortion?
A lot of it depends on the woman or girl's own attitude about abortion and her family's attitude and her peers and the environment. But the abortion itself is not necessarily a threatening thing. It's all how the woman views it. And I've seen girls and young women go through abortions and who have really accepted it and understand it and do not feel guilty about it, and they can really feel a lot of relief that they don't have the burden of motherhood at that time. And as long as the people that they're intimate with or the people that they care about and who care about them don't blame them and consider them foul and evil, then it's something that they can live with and accept.
To expand on that, then what about the mothers who have given their children up for adoption without even seeing them?
I think that's a real good option, but it doesn't take place very often. The great majority, and I wish I had statistics, but the great majority of unwed mothers, once they decide to carry the child to term, will keep the child and not give the child up for adoption. And why that is so, I can't say for sure, but one factor is that in the wards where the the pregnant women are before they're delivered in the university hospitals and whatever. The other mothers really put a lot of pressure on the mothers who want to give their child up for adoption and say, oh, how can you do that? How can you not love your child enough to want to keep the child in your care of it? And some of the young girls and women who had decided to give up the child for adoption changed.
You're then saying that there is influence from others, that it is not the individual.
It's cultural.
That brings into another question. From my understanding, are there not a tremendous amount of people waiting for adoptions that can't get them?
Yes. In fact, at one time I spoke to a number of people about abortion and what their feelings were, and there were a number of people who opposed abortion just because they were waiting for a child for adoption, and they were hoping if abortion wasn't present as an option, that there would be more infants floating around, you know, in the pool or whatever, that they could adopt. And if young girls who were pregnant for whatever reason and didn't want to keep the child, if they were to decide to give child up for adoption, it'd be a real nice solution. It just doesn't happen.
Well, does that not also bring up the question then that the possibility that our society is, instead of picking a abortion versus full birth, are we not possibly getting the cart before the horse, so to speak, in that we are not teaching what we should be teaching?
Okay, two answers to that one. It's hard to change society. It's easier to change the laws than it is to expect a lot of change in a short period of time. And the second thing is, it's a lot to ask a 12 or a 15-year-old to carry a pregnancy for 9 months and to go into labor. Not only is it dangerous for a real young girl to give birth, but it really changes their attitudes about themselves, their ability to concentrate in school and finish junior high or high school. It's asking a lot.
Does it not also ask, frankly, I don't know where I stand in this, but what I see out of this is that we, from birth, at least I, was taught from the book, the Bible. The Bible, to me, does not condone this. Are we not failing what we should be doing in the beginning, rather than are we not slipping as a society into condoning mistakes?
I agree.
And saying that you made a mistake, pat them on the back, and answer it the simplest, quickest, easiest way. Are we getting to a point in our society where we are not facing our problems, are not realizing our attitudes when we enter into this problem? Are we missing something?
I may be misinterpreting your comment, but I would say we're missing the boat in a couple of ways, and one of them maybe is to encourage young girls to not feel that they have to have intercourse early in life, and because there is a social pressure. But as I said, society is hard to change. And the other mistake we're making is not educating young girls about sex and about contraception, so that they end up without even realizing that intercourse is going to end in pregnancy, having them be pregnant with a big surprise. But those things are hard to change, and it takes some real society attitude changes before those will
happen. Well, I don't think it's been all that long that society has officially not condoned the unwed mother, and that there were more babies. I mean, I can't put any statistics on it, but it certainly has been in the last couple of decades that there were lots of babies up for adoption, and it was a rare thing for people to keep a girl to keep a baby. And I think it's come since society has condoned a much more free attitude towards sex, and that sex outside the marriage bond has become sort of an everyday thing. Talk about television programs. It wasn't too long ago you couldn't even have a couple in bed together on television programs.
One of the things that's changed in those years is the welfare laws. And, you know, it's easier for a woman to keep her child and to be financially independent with the welfare, so she doesn't have to be dependent on her parents.
That's really financially dependent.
Financially dependent on welfare, but, you know.
Here, okay. In the back, and then over here.
Okay, I'd like to go back. The thing, one of the things you're totally ignoring is, how many women do you know who, back in the past, gave up a child, carried it to term, gave it up, and they have the most messed up lives you've ever seen, and it's not only their life, they subsequently marry, and they involve several other lives. You know, I don't think there are too many women who could willfully carry a pregnancy through 9 months and then just turn off that part of their life like that. I don't think anyone is built that way. Excuse me.
That still wouldn't answer the question of whether a woman is... please don't take this as a chauvinist remark. It doesn't answer the question of whether or not the woman was still obligated to take on that extra burden of carrying the beast.
I'm going back to something he was... he didn't really say it, but he was sort of alluding to it. And that some of the studies done show that the women who have first trimester abortions are tremendously better balanced than those who went through the pregnancy, gave the child up for adoption. That is a trauma, and you know, it's really easy to say, well, fine, give it up, adoption. You know, there's a loving family somewhere that wants it. Well, hey, everybody has to make decisions they can live with, and if you force somebody to make a decision they can't live with, that is a tremendous injustice and actually, I think, an unchristian act.
The moral question is, however, whether a person is obligated to take on those extra burdens. It could be that both morally and legally they are obligated to take on the extra burdens. Factually, they are extra burdens. But that, I think, it still leaves the moral question open. I'm not saying the conclusion you would come to is wrong. Yes?
Much of the discussion that I've heard so far has been dealing with the comfort of people while they are living here, and we must not lose sight of the fact that every person will face the judge on Judgment Day. And it came to my attention recently that the early people in this country, and this country was founded primarily by Christians, had a different view of ending a life here sooner than would otherwise have been. And so if a person were sentenced to death, they did not view that as the worst thing that could happen to that person. They viewed it as the worst thing that could happen to him if he were unrepentant and he went to hell. And so the judge said, may God have mercy on your soul. I believe as Christians we must look at the eternal view, find that God did know you before you were formed in the womb, therefore you are a person. And as Christians, we must realize the personhood from conception on, realize what our stand must be, and do what we can to keep our country in line with God's law, because the further we get out from God's law, the more miserable it will become.
Okay. Suppose that is the argument for a particular Christian community. What is the argument that that should be the law of the state, a state which includes many people who don't share that view?
The closer I get to God, the more I see I must always speak out as one of His children, and I cannot do what you asked us to do to keep the parochial argument out of it. I must always say, God is, we will all face Him, and therefore we should make our laws be in line with what His plan was for us. And people can make up their own minds as to whether they will go that way or not. We have countries in the world who are morally in line with God, and we have other countries which are not. And you can judge those for yourself. But we can live as Christians in any of those. We certainly prefer that.
And where's that pipeline?
There's
a different pipeline.
A question here that was
raised
a while
back.
Two things.
I'm not sure how far we're going to get on trying to answer the question that we should be trying to answer. We're kind of trying to legislate morality by definition. It's deciding what is and what isn't a life, and then how do we deal with that definition. But to maybe possibly add another dimension and segregate something here, we're talking partially about the opportunity of some people to adopt what they want to love when somebody else has accidentally come upon something that they didn't intend to have. Another dimension is, what is the morality of employing a young woman to have a baby, not your baby, but to say, I'm willing to pay the next lady who gets pregnant $6,000 to carry that baby and sell it to me. That is happening all the time. I think it helps put in perspective what we're talking about. We would like to find babies on the street that we can adopt that somebody else has gone to a lot of work to produce. Society right now won't permit you to sell babies. You want to talk about that concept. It kind of fits in with this concept of some of us wanting to find babies in the street that we can adopt.
It's not against the law in all states, though, for a woman to carry somebody else's baby. You could be artificially inseminated.
It's against the law to sell one, though.
Yeah.
I had a young woman come into my office and wanted to know if I knew anybody who would like to adopt the baby she was carrying before she considered abortion. My shot, you know.
Yes?
I'd like to speak to what I think was the statement back here, that because abortion is contrary to God's will, it should be made illegal. Yet we've got the Ten Commandments. I presume we all believe that the Ten Commandments represent God's will, but they have not been written in to our law. Should we write in each of the Ten Commandments into our law? If one should be done because it's God's will, it seems to me like the other should also.
The consideration on the side of her argument, however, is that the claim the argument makes is that theologically the fetus is a person. Then how can people who do believe, for whatever reason, that the fetus is a person, tolerate a state without at least continually opposing it, tolerate a state which is murder, because that's what it is from your point of view.
Now, if you legally define it, it's not murder.
The question is whether we should legally define it as murder. And she says, given her religious views of the fetus as a person with rights, anybody in her position would have to regard it as murder.
But you're not allowing us to use that.
Well, does that make sense within our... We've got to come back to moral arguments. It's a question of whether or not that argument makes sense even to people who don't share her point of view.
Well, aren't there a significant group of people that take the opposite view on almost every law we have? I read some research not long ago of someone who went into the prison population down in Florida, and they discovered that the moral development level of these people was such that the great bulk of them believed that stealing was only wrong if you got caught. So, you know, any laws against stealing, they would be on the other side of the fence. I don't know whether that's really a valid reason for not making a law, but we don't all agree on
that. That reinforces her viewpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if we have consensus on any laws.
People don't have rights to property, some people would say, but we still have laws against that. Some people say the fetus doesn't have rights, but we still might.
Look where those people were who they surveyed.
Yeah, but what he's saying is because we don't have consensus in our total population, it's a fair-headed law. I'm saying we have, I mean, those people are part of the population of the state of Florida, and yet they don't believe in that law. They feel like it's okay to take anyone's property if you can get away with it.
Well, on the other hand, if you say, I believe, you know, back to the use of populated earth, that I believe a woman ought to be pregnant every year, and I'm going to make that law because that's what God told me, and I enforce that on you.
Except you won't be able to because, it depends on what the percentage of the population that shares that belief, and more than likely...
Well, no, God told me, though. The closer I get to God, the closer I get that wretched.
Okay, but then you are
in the Bible, not me. That's what's in the Bible. It's great for Genesis.
But then you're free to... carry out what you believe as far as voting or whatever. Or you
well, that's what the argument is. Because one person sees it that way, we all have to fight.
How are they going to enforce this law?
Are they going to imprison people who have it, or are they going to fine them?
Somebody made the comment this morning or yesterday sometime that it would mean that every miscarriage would have to be investigated.
No, the amendment would not say that natural abortions are anybody's
problem.
That doesn't
natural.
Well, if you, oh, I see. You're just getting to the evidence question. How do you determine whether it's
natural or not?
Other question.
Leslie, and then the question back. Go ahead.
I guess my part of the problem that I have with that statement is that it doesn't really allow for any specific instances in the situation where it was raped, or, well, as we just said before, not to use the birth control that was uninvited yet. I guess I have problems with that because of the fact that, I don't know, I think there are a lot of different kinds of deaths or murders, to make a woman bear a child, to make a woman who's been raped bear a child, seems to me to be a kind of murder.
Some of the proposals have been to exclude those abortions from those that are banned.
And that statement also, which probably most of you are already aware, would not allow women to use IUDs. Because an IUD acts by preventing a fertilized egg from implanting in the uterus. And so you already have a fertilized egg, already a human being, it's murder. And for some women, an IUD is the only form of birth control that they can use.
I think they also would not allow you to use the pill.
No, the pill prevents ovulation.
Yeah, Larry?
This doesn't settle the matter conclusively, but there was an interview with Orrin Hatch, senator from Utah, who heads the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on the Constitution, about the constitutional amendment and about the Senate law. And the question was posed to him, would the law require states to punish a rape victim seeking an abortion as a murderer, or the druggist who sold her a morning after pill as an accomplice? And Orrin Hatch's reply was, I think that is something that would have to be resolved afterwards. Afterwards, is the question. Answer, after the passage of the bill, assuming it passes. The interviewer, some people would argue that you shouldn't leave those kinds of loose ends. Answer, Senator Hatch. Well, unfortunately, the law always does leave loose ends because there's no way of absolutely determining how a particular law is going to be interpreted by any of the courts, including the Supreme Court.
I think another issue, and I think you brought it up before, is the whole, I mean, it would be wonderful if society accepted, you know, women that had made a mistake or, I don't know, you know, unwed mothers. But I think in most situations that there isn't any kind of support given other than maybe financial support and
financial support is going down the drain too.
Yeah.
Let me
just interject one comment about the rape business. If the fetus is morally a person, then I don't see that the argument that the mother should be allowed to have an abortion in the case of rape is much stronger than that she should be allowed to have an abortion any other time. To be sure, a crime was committed against her. To be sure, the inconvenience and the grief and the pain is greater. But it doesn't seem to me to be morally great enough to outweigh the fetus's right to life, and we start the discussion with the conviction that the fetus is a person.
Only a man can call pregnancy an inconvenience.
I guess that, you know, what I was trying to say is that I think...
Let's call it a bird.
I think that there can be a death of the spirit or whatever. That a part of you might die. I don't know. You know, maybe I'm making it too up in the air. But...
I'm just trying to explain why pro-life people would follow the logic of their argument out and say, even in the case of rape, abortion should not be.
Well, I've been kind of wondering about the great big hassle all of us are going to get into with the guilt and everything else. For those of us who remember the Prohibition Amendment and how it just drove teenagers and other people to, into doing things that they weren't proud of. And everybody had these big hang-ups about breaking laws and other things, and they were daring themselves to do it because it was a little bit naughty. They had to finally repeal that. I don't see how this came to not only make this stand up as a law, I don't see how they're going to really enforce it. I think if they pass an amendment to the Constitution, that in so many years they probably have to repeal it.
Yeah, it'll turn a lot of young girls and a lot of physicians into criminals.
Well, but then on the other side, I think the beginning has to come with the teaching of the moral, so people can make their own judgments and hope for they never get into a problem where they have to make a tough decision like that. I'm sure it wouldn't be easy.
Don't you think they'll be able to enforce it mostly against poor people?
Yeah. Yeah, the rich ones will buy their way. You're right.
Yep.
The rich can arrange to have a first trimester miscarriage.
How Christian is that?
Well,
in the back. Yes, you.
I feel strongly against anything going into the that is an amendment to the Constitution, you know, with the ban of abortion. But it's for the same reason that I feel very strongly against what that the woman had said over there before abortion. It's almost the same thing. I think abortions haven't been considered aesthetically. I think they're uncreative, to say the least. I think to state that there's going to be pollution or an overpopulation, and children and girls are going to have a hard time, they're not going to love the rest of their children, all of those reasons speak for a kind of order, a kind of established nicety. They speak against chaos, and I'm for chaos rather than that. And that's for the same reason I'd be against the constitutional thing that speaks for that kind of order. How can I be against both those things? I don't know, but I really am very strongly feeling against abortion.
I think what you're saying is that you're for choice.
No, I'm not saying that either. I'm for chaos and for less order and for more creativity that comes out of that and more life that comes out of that.
The constitutional amendment will probably provide that.
Chaos.
Steve?
Thinking about the arguments that you presented early on, let me know if you can't hear. Okay. What responsibility does a person have in exercising their sexual capacity? Your argument about a woman uses birth control and against her will she becomes pregnant. We use birth control as a choice to attempt to control our reproductive capacity, which most of us possess. And in the same way that we attempt to control a great deal of the universe, it seems to me that we are not in control, that we can't make it rain when we want it to stop the forest from burning down and to save the crop. We can't make our kids behave sometimes when they really won't. We can't stop ourselves from being beaten at times, because that's the way we are. And I'm not convinced that an argument based on a less than perfect technological innovation is adequate. That in some way we bear a responsibility when we go to bed, that the possibility is a pregnancy will result. And I'm not convinced that that allows us to get around to abortion.
If you have the capacity to stop the forest fire, you have the option to stop the forest fire, and if you do have a pregnancy that was unwanted and the capability exists to prevent that from happening, that I think the woman should have the choice to do that.
Well,
saying is she has the choice when she gets in the cab.
But that, you know,
in an abstract way, that sounds real right, that the woman should bear the responsibility. But in the real, real world, these little girls just don't know what they're getting into. And the other, you know, that there is one pregnancy in every 100 women years that results from the appropriate use of the pill, and you may do everything right and be almost guaranteed that you shouldn't get pregnant and it still happens.
The pro-life people will not deny.
Well, you must have intercourse, but I don't think you'll stop the world from having intercourse.
Pro-life people do not deny any of the bad effects of not having abortions. It's just that they don't think those bad effects outweigh the weightier right to life of the fetus, and the reason they believe that the fetus has a right to life is they just don't see that there's a morally relevant line as you back down from infancy into the fetus. And to be very honest, though my intuition that the final stage come out strongly pro-choice, I really can't marshal the arguments to get them there because of the problem I just stated.
Yeah, but doesn't the Constitution also guarantee some freedom and rights to pursue happiness and all that? And from my perspective as a worker in daycare, I see a number of these children that Carol is so afraid of bringing into the world whose rights to those constitutional rights are totally out of question because of the fact that they were brought into the world by parents who did not want them and did not then provide for them psychologically what their needs were. And isn't that also a form of murder? It's sort of an inch by inch by inch kind of murder. It's less than life connected with like that.
The problem is that in other areas of the law, we have quite steadfastly said, better life than no life at all. You said that in the case of newborns, very clearly. Most cases. Yes?
In the cases that you're talking about, though, I'm sure you wouldn't advocate taking those children out and shooting them so as to prevent them from having further misery.
No, I'd probably shoot the mother.
So the question really is it a person at the time of conception? If the answer to that question is yes, then is it not murder to deliberately stop that life from continuing? That's the question.
I agree with you. I'm not arguing against that at all. It's just that when, you know, I've lived with these children, worked with them, and seen how absolutely miserable a three-year-old can be, and how much he firmly believes that the entirety of society is against him. And if he's already firmly convinced of that at age three, so that when a new person who comes into the room to love and care for him, meets him, and he's already got his little psychological boots up because he's had so many bad experiences with adults in his life. You know, then I really question, would he have been better off aborted than having to go through a life of misery?
But it's the same thing as shooting him now.
Yes.
Winston Churchill had all those psychological hang-ups. I mean, people...
I'm thinking about we have a sense that there's a lot of problems with our culture, with our society, and that somehow abortion might be a way of limiting the pain that these children feel of it's the least cost solution. And I'm concerned about the reverse. As abortion is a response to the present cultural and social situation, it's also a statement about the future. It's a step in the direction of the future. Some right to life people say abortion is a way of teaching people that kids don't count. And if it's okay to kill unborn kids, then it's okay to beat them. When, you know, 2 days after they're born, you might as well beat them to death before they're born. Is legalizing abortion a statement to our society about what infants count for, what children unborn or born count for?
What about old people accountable?
What old people accountable?
But abortion is legal at present, and I don't think, and this country is still recognized as being very concerned about lives. And, you know, and just because a person is for abortion does not mean that they're against life.
Still, the pro-life people say, though it may well be the case that a society that permits abortion can revere its infants and children, rationally, where is the line, and why wouldn't? Where is the morally relevant line if you go down? Now, some people are bothered by that. Other people are much more pragmatist in their outlook and are not bothered by it.
The answer is the pro-life people are for capital punishment and nuclear and war.
Nope.
Not all of it. Sojourner Magazine, as was noted.
Yeah. I've heard several statements here referring to people being pro-abortion, and I suspect there's nobody in the room that's pro-abortion. And I think, really, we're not talking about being pro-abortion or against abortion. We're talking about pro choice or prohibition of choice, aren't we? Really? Choice on behalf of
most money. People wouldn't say that they oppose choice either. But they would say that they oppose abortion.
Yeah, but I've heard remarks here as if some individuals here are telling others of us that we're pro-abortion. Anything I've said certainly doesn't mean that I'm in favor of abortion. But I've certainly got a very open mind and I'm inclined to believe that the mother should have a choice, the prospective mother should have a choice. That doesn't make me pro-abortion.
And I'd agree with that too, that I would do everything, you know, possible to see that, you know, that everything preceding the step that results in an abortion doesn't happen. You know, that I don't like to see abortions take place, but it girls and women do get into the position when they're forced to, and I would rather not see them get into that position.
Larry?
Well, I was just going to respond to Steve's comment. I hear it. You know, the argument about the slippery slope. But I'm impressed with the complexities there. Because I don't think you have demonstrable evidence that in Japan you have a cheapening of human life going on, even though abortions are readily turned to in Japan. A high number of people have abortions in Japan. I don't think that you have evidence that in Scandinavia you have case of the cheapening of human life. As I mentioned in one of the sessions, probably the most exemplary care for infants who cannot care for themselves is in Scandinavia. But abortions are readily available, legal, safe, on demand, at least early abortions. I don't think that in the German Democratic Republic you have a case of at least evidence of a cheapening of life or neglect of the child and so on. And abortions are about as frequent as they are in Japan, which is a very high percentage. That doesn't make me conclude that where abortions are available, it doesn't have any kind of impact, or that somehow infants are valued more. I just think it's much more complex than the slippery slope argument.
I wasn't trying to offer a slippery slope as much as a question that a social policy is more than just a look backward, but that in some way it is a step forward somewhere.
That's a very important point. But again, it depends on what the understanding of abortion is. I mean, what kind of social attitudes are present in the society concerning that will be what kind of a statement it is about the society and about its future. It isn't intrinsic. Those things are all invested with human meanings. And what those human meanings are matters so much.
So when the pro-life person keeps demanding for a line in principle between infancy and some earlier point, that person is asking the wrong question.
Yeah.
There aren't those kinds of lines in principle. Well, we shape those lines with our perspective.
We sure do.
And that's
yes.
because of the complexity that the making it the law would be so bad. One should be in favor of the complexity. I use a bad word as chaos, but I think oversimplification is the thing that the law would do, and I think that would really be unhuman, unaesthetic.
Yes?
This may be an overly cynical statement, but I think that this discussion is helpful for all of us to wrestle with our own moral judgments on different things, but I tend to think that other things that we do are more harmful to our, quote, respect or high regard for life than this particular example, of the way we don't respond to other human needs or respond improperly to other, you know, glaring human needs. This is one example, but I think it's a lesser example than some of the things we ignore.
Two questions in front here.
I was just going to bring out something that I haven't heard anyone mention. I thought he had English as a second language last year for a while. The people from Southeast Asia begin counting their age from the time of conception.
Yeah.
Which is kind of,
yeah.
I don't know what that's worth, but it apparently tells where they feel humanity begins.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I guess one of the things that really bothers me too is that this really important decision, which affects women so vitally, is being made by all male incumbents. I mean, we have such a handful of women in Congress, and here we guys, I mean, in a sense, really are sitting in judgment. And I really feel it's a woman that really has to make the choice, and it's really so unfair. I mean, if I were a woman, here's the answer. And I mean, you know, they just aren't being heard. And I mean, you know, I'm just really glad there's a woman who's on the Supreme Court, but I mean, you know, that's a voice of one, and you know, who really knows where she would stand, but it really bugs me when, you know, we are making these vital decisions from a male standpoint. So
maybe even the woman beyond the childbearing age shouldn't have a voice in it.
Pro-life. The pro-life people say there's enough, that there's also something distinctively unfair about the woman making the choice, even collectively. They're a party, an interested party to the decision. Maybe it's also unfair to have men make the decision, but we can't get a neutral third party.
One comment that occurs to me is that you can talk about things like this in the abstract and sit around here very comfortable like this and so on. And this is to kind of think what would happen to Shirley and myself if one of our beautiful daughters, who we love dearly, who are excellent girls, who are dedicated Christians, happened to make a mistake. What would we do? That would be a very heart-wrenching decision to make, I tell you. And ones in this room have daughters, I sure would have the same opinion that I have. But to call my daughter a murderer if she decided that this is the right thing to do, it would just tear me up. You have to force her to carry that a unwanted pregnancy, which is a mistake, which anybody could have happened. It happened to me many years ago when I was young, before I was married. It happened to anybody in this room, I'm sure, before they were married. Could have happened. Under the right circumstances of moonlit night and the emotions and things like this. I mean, we are sexual beings. We do have these emotions. And, you know, a lot of us could say, never but the grace of God go I. And when you talk about, you know, somebody in the inner city, you know, we can be very judgmental and very unemotional about that. But just ask yourself the question, if you had a daughter and she became pregnant for some reason or other, not, I don't mean a promiscuous daughter, I don't mean one that's wild or anything else, I mean just a very lovely, beautiful daughter, what would you do? Be a really tough decision.